Let's turn to our gospel reading this morning from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 12. Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But Jesus said to him, "Friend, who set me to be a judge or an arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take care, be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." Then he told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly. And he thought to himself, "What should I do? For I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich toward God." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Martin Winnecke, I think that's how you say his name, wrote an article for a journal that I have begun reading a little bit from called Cosmos. It's an online journal. And the article that he wrote was called "Dreaming Beyond Capitalism, A Culture Without Fear." The opening paragraph of this article is this. "In the 1990s, an unusual encounter took place in the Equatorian Amazon. In plant rituals, shamans of the Aquar, a tribe living in pristine forest that had never been in touch with Western civilization, received the warning that the white men would try to invade their lands, cut down the forest, and exploit the resources. Deeply shaken, they called out to the spirits for help. Soon after, white people did approach them, coming to them, however, with supportive intentions. A group of activists from the United States searching for ways to protect indigenous peoples from the oil industry. The Westerners found a deeply interconnected tribal society living in profound symbiosis with the earth. Seeing the bulldozers coming closer and closer, they asked the elders of the tribe how they could survive. And the elders responded in a surprising way. They were straightforward and they said, 'Don't try to help us here. Go back to your own culture and change the dream of the modern world. It is because of this dream that we are perishing.'" So the people that our people were trying to help said, "Don't come here and just try to help us and change us. Go back home to your own country and your own culture and change who you are." As I read the parable of Jesus that I just shared with you from the Gospel of Luke, I think Jesus is starting to say, "We are getting it wrong, folks. We're focusing too much on things and stuff. And we need to focus on one another and our connections, both with one another and the world around us." He's saying, "Change the dream of the modern world." We live in a capitalist society. We live in a global economy. We live in a culture in which profit seems to be the highest priority. We live in a way that we are told over and over again, messages from our culture to ourselves, to each other, are that we have to look out for ourselves first because no one else is going to care about us. Our own needs are more important than those of our brothers and sisters. More stuff is better than less stuff. New stuff is better than old stuff. And it's easy for us to fall into the trap of believing that I better get mine, I better take care of myself while I can, because someone else is coming up behind me and going to try to get it away from me. This sense of our world, this understanding of our world, leads to fear and to anger and to violence. We convince ourselves that people we do not know, or who speak a different language, or who look different than us, or practice other religions, we say that they are out to get us. And we barricade ourselves away from others and the world, and we get our world view narrower and narrower and narrower, and begin to think that we are the only ones that we can trust. People like us are the only ones who care about what we care about. And eventually, what we believe, our fears that others are trying to take our stuff away, starts to actually come true. Violence and war erupt, and nobody wins. There are places in the world where this has already happened. We, as Americans, have already participated in this world view. But as people of faith, we are called to understand the world in a different way. And we read the scriptures, and we listen to stories, and we have a legacy of people who have come before us who have practiced a new way, a different way of being in the world. So we look at this parable that Jesus shared that day. He shares it in response to a brother asking Jesus to mediate in an argument with his older brother. Younger brothers and older brothers. I know there are younger brothers and older brothers, younger sisters and older sisters in this congregation today. We know what it's like to be the oldest or the youngest or the middle. We know what it's like to see one person get some and someone else not get much. And Jesus tells the story of this rich young man who is storing things for his future. He's preparing, saving up for his future, for himself, and for his family. And isn't that what we are all trained to do? Save for emergencies, save for retirement. Shouldn't we always have that little bit set aside for a rainy day? We should keep what we have. We earned it. For people like us who live in our culture, it seems like the logical and smart thing to do. I still remember the time when I was in my early 20s, had just joined the workforce after college, and my dad said to me, "You should be putting money aside right now for retirement." So when you're in your early 20s, you're thinking about something 40 years away, trying to make a living, make ends meet on a very low salary. And I was like, "Yeah, Dad, I know I should, but seriously, I got to put gas in the car. I got to pay my rent." Now, being much closer to retirement than I was then, I think to myself, "Yeah, I should have just really paid more attention to what he said. I'd be much more prepared, potentially, to retire." He was right, and had I set aside money at that time, I would have much more now and be more prepared, but I'm not. But this isn't a story about planning for the future. That's not what the fella in the story was really doing. What he was doing was saying, "Look at everything I have amassed. And now I can just sit around and relax because I have so much." But it's a story also about community. Because you know, this rich young man did not go out there and plant those seeds himself. He did not till the soil. He did not pull the weeds. He did not harvest the grain. He did not separate it. He did not do any of that labor. And when he tells the story and reflects on what he has, he gives no consideration to those who did that work. This is a story about how we can't be self-centered and believe that our own needs are of more importance than those of others. We can't be trapped into thinking the grace and the abundance that comes our way is of our own doing, but that instead it is a community effort, and thus should be shared with the whole community. We all live and work in different systems. We have an American myth, though, that embraces the notion that if we try hard enough and work hard enough, we can all succeed beyond our wildest dreams. Rugged individualism. We talk about it and act as if we have made it on our own when we become very successful. But we don't, because there's always someone who supports us along the way. The people who till the land, who plant the seeds, who weed the crops and complete the harvest, all those people along the way. Or if we're not thinking about a farming situation, think about the people who built the roads or the fire company that comes and puts the fire out that might be about to take over all of our property. We do all of this together. We do not do anything alone. And this young man in the story was acting as if he was responsible for all of his own success. We're familiar with that kind of thinking. Sometimes we fall into it ourselves, but we all know others that we have seen do the same thing. We hear the stories as people justify their actions, and we say, well, he took the risk, he invested, he had the vision, he deserves everything that he got. If others had just taken the same kind of risk, then they would be wealthy too, but they're not smart enough, or they didn't have the vision enough. But that's not what Jesus is telling us in this story. Jesus is telling us that there's more than just ourselves to consider as we look and live in the world. Jealousy and covetousness play a big role in our lives. When we see other people being successful, and we wish we could be the same way. But sometimes we do things, or we have companies around us that do things that don't make sense. They use up all of the natural resources in a community, and then they just walk away. People are worn out and used up and don't know what their future will hold. The earth stops producing at the same rate. Resources are just gone. When we live only for ourselves, we forget the system that we are a part of. And once the resources are gone and communities are used up, violence begins to take hold. It becomes the norm. Our lives are punctuated by events that we have to recover from. That's what fuels migration around the world, the using up of resources, the lack of an ability to create safety and care for our families. We grasp for more and more, and we get less and less, and we become anxious for our children, for our future. And we live with this feeling that there should be or could be more. When we think that the young ruler is the way to live, we're likely to become the people who don't have what they need. I live on the west side of Buffalo, and my husband and I have lived there for almost 25 years now. And it's always been a changing, raucous neighborhood. People come and people go. There are a lot of immigrants and refugees who live in this neighborhood now. People dressed in colors and fabrics from all over the world with different traditions, walking up and down the streets, sharing this community together. There have always been drug houses on various corners and on various blocks, and We know that at many of the corner stores, if you want to buy a weapon, you probably can. And so there's danger and lack of community, but then there's all these people from around the world who have come to make a new life. So this summer, there have been quite a few reports of stolen bicycles and stolen hanging plants from people's porches. Someone stole our grill out of our backyard. So things, little things, just sort of eat at your quality of life. It's not a really big deal, but it just is a little bit irritating. And there have been reports of these things happening on a particular page on Facebook. And after each one, not each one, but many of the reports, people then suggest that it's immigrants who are doing these things, often the bikes in particular. My husband John and I were talking about this a couple of days ago, and I was reminded of how different cultures share things. John and I heard someone speak several years ago now about a culture that he had lived with as he was working in his, he was studying this culture. It was somewhere out in probably Indonesia. And it was a group of people who had not really had a lot of connection with the Western world prior to his visit with them. And he was studying them, and then he subsequently wrote a book about them. And he talked about his experience with them, and he said how kind and generous they were. But one of the things that was very difficult for him to embrace about them was they had no sense of personal property. So he lived in a hut by himself, and he had a few things that he had brought from home, a few comforts that made his time there easier. And maybe he had a few things like a bucket or some other things that would have been useful to the people he was living with. Well, it would mean nothing to the people he was with for them to walk into his hut and take his bucket and go use it if they had need of a bucket. They didn't ask for permission. They just would take things because it was there and he wasn't using it at the moment. And this would begin to drive him nuts because then he wouldn't be able to find his things when he did want to use them. And he would talk to them and say, "Could you not just leave my bucket here?" And they would say, "But you're not using it. I needed it. I used it." But it was a different understanding between personal property, private property, and how the community works together. Their sense was, it's there, no one's using it, I need it now, I'm going to take it and use it. So when I was talking to John about this, I thought, you know what, some of the immigrants who come to our community might have a different sense of personal property. So if they come by a bicycle that's not being used and they know they need a bicycle to get to work, they may think that it's okay to take it and use it for an important purpose. I have no idea. It's probably just kids being vandals. But on the other hand, we have to learn how to share and how to be in community with one another. And I wonder if our immigrant friends, when they want to use our stuff, are teaching a lesson about community and giving up that allegiance to individual ownership that we seem to be so dedicated to in our communities. Collective living is so far from our sense of how we live today. We live in gated communities, we have backyards, we drive in cars, we don't see each other very often, except in line at the grocery store or when we come to worship. But we don't live communally, we live individually. And I think that Jesus uses this parable to remind people that we are a community and we can't live just for ourselves. The good news is that even though communal living is far from our common practice, we can change. We've had glimpses of people changing as we watch people live with more compassion toward one another, as we watch communities set up tool libraries where they can buy one snowblower for the whole block club to use instead of having 20 snowblowers where everybody does it on their own, or one lawnmower or one set of garden tools. We can learn how to live more communally from our indigenous neighbors around the world. We can learn to embrace compassion and solidarity and cooperation, which are the foundations of communal living, as we listen to Jesus teaching us how to live the gospel life. Young people are sharing homes and cars and jobs, finding a way to build lives instead of careers. We can read about it as people talk about the millennials doing things differently. The auto industry is a little bit worried because millennial people are not buying cars at the same rate as previous generations because they found ways to share and to be together rather than individually. We are called to this experiment of building communities and sharing what we have rather than building barns to show how much success we have achieved. We are called to build community with compassion and love and grace at the heart of those communities. We are called to learn and to demonstrate being rich toward God in all that we say and all that we do. And so let us be about that work with our whole lives. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.